Blog Talk Radio.
Now what you hear is not a test. Now what you hear is not a test. Now what you hear is not a test. Now what you hear is not a test.
Well, goodness gracious, let me just take this. Time out to pull a rhyme out and update this. For you and yours, simply because some MCs have luck but suck. So I pluck them like feathers on the back of a chicken. Cause I'm mad like a bitch when my man's too sick. Positive is a mind state, but it can still mean that I will kick a ill, malicious like mean rap. Suckers, they force me to knock them all out and they think they know things like what I'm about and they try to analyze, criticize, scandalize. Their outcome is death. Don't ask me to sympathize, realize that I'm not to be played with. I flip so fast, you won't know I'm the same kid. I'm tired and fed with all the weeks I'm sick. All that phony baloney that went out like protests. You've got no legs, so you shoot blank. It's me, the crowd thanks, as I step to the top rank. Banking my money and investing it wisely.
Welcome to the Ghost Squad Sports Radio Podcast. It is I, Puma, along with Ice Water. Got a special show lined up tonight. We're going to talk about sports, of course, but got my man Smart Ray coming in to talk about the Bulls. Me and him have been going back and forth on our Ghost Squad Radio Facebook page, and it would be good to hear from him. We haven't heard from him in a long time. How you doing, Ice Water?
You talking to me? No, I'm good. What's up, bro?
Just wrapped up another First 40 video on YouTube. Check it out. It was just me and Ice, Black Thor, who is called to duty today. Is not going to be with us today on the First 40. So you ladies who are in love with his voice, he won't be there. So you have to settle for me and Ice War. But check out the First 40 with the Afro pick and the Afro of Ice Water, taking it back to the 70s, the funk doctor, as I call him, or the funk captain, as I call him. Any overlapping stories that you want to talk about that came out in First 40, bro?
Let's see. Wow. Maybe McCaffrey a little bit, but... we better leave that alone. Maybe, yeah, I'm going to let you leave. I'll leave it up to you.
Maybe
actually,
a little
you
later.
Know what? Huh?
Go ahead. You want to bring it up now?
Talk to you. I don't care. That or, you know, the one I really would be talking about, we can also talk about that, Charles Oakley. I'm going to leave it up to you. I told you two things, so okay. No call.
Okay. We can talk about McCaffrey now, and then maybe with when Smart Ray comes in, after we talk about Bulls, we go back to Charles Oakley, because I know he'll bust my chops about the Bulls beating the Knicks and them not being able to get by the Bulls. But we were talking on the First 40 about Christian McCaffrey, and was he worth being the highest paid running back in the league right now? And I want to start off by saying I'm a big McCaffrey fan. I've been a fan of his since he was wearing a number 5 at Stanford, well, the Stanford Cardinal. Matter of fact, on this same show, I said that I thought that he should have won the Heisman based on what he was doing for that Stanford team. And I think the only reason why they didn't, why he didn't, is because Stanford wasn't one of those high-ranking teams in college football. But what he was doing out on the field, he was the Stanford offense, and keeping them in games and helping them win games. One of the things that I felt coming out of the First 40 is that hopefully this will be a domino effect where other running backs like Henry, Kamari, and other running backs in the league, you talk about Delvin Cook out of Minnesota, you're talking about a lot of different running backs, the Seattle Seahawk running back, all these different running backs should get paid. They should get paid. I got a list of the running backs that Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, Saquon Barkley, when his contract comes up, I think he should be one of those guys that should be considered being highest paid. Of course, Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb from Cleveland, Josh Jacobs from the Raiders, the Las Vegas Raiders. You talk about Joe Mixon down there in Cincinnati. You talk about Miles Sanders from Philadelphia. These are some of the running backs that comparably could be on that same production level as a McCaffrey. Will they be considered and get that same money or more money than McCaffrey? So, I'm going to let you take it over from here.
Yeah, well, the point of it is looking at it from a different kind of perspective. There's a couple things that came up. We're not going to touch that one. But, I think it really comes down to...
Well, let the people know. It was a race issue. We didn't make it a race issue, but that's the first thing that came through my mind. I know when I looked at him, like, everybody else is having problems getting their contract, and he comes out of the blue, and there it is.
Well, see, to me, it's not that simple. I think he got his contract because of the factor. One of the reasons why is it was his time, and his team valued him that way, particularly with Cam Newton leaving. So that might be coincidence. You might say that other people were trying to get their contract, but who gives you your money and whether or not they give you your money depends on your GM and the team. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's how part of it. So they went all in on him. It just so happens that he had a different skin tone, which some people can throw that out at him too. But can you be mad at if that's what Carolina wants to do? And two, the timing was right. Go ahead.
He's a new face of Carolina Panthers right now.
Yeah, that's my point.
That's
so all of those factors.
Yeah, right.
But no, you're good. That's it. But that's part of the factors, though. But just to kind of throw it up because he happens to be of a different hue is not the right way to do it. I mean, so
right. People
can say the same thing about Kirk Cousins. Why did he get his money? But Kirk Cousins, at the same point, is Kirk Cousins, it was his time. So somebody had to pay him. So when it's your time, you have to get your money. That's the key. So there's a lot. And this is the main point that came up, I think, in the first 40, was just because you don't have to be the best talent to be paid the highest, okay?
Hey.
Some guys that are the highest paid player, but they're not the best player at their position for Cousins.
Hey.
And that's what came from me, from what I understood. So, granted, if it's their time, and then, of course, whatever the going rate, a team that makes sense and wants to invest is going to take care of their player. They're going to do
right. That.
If you want to have that person around, then you invest in them. If you don't want them around, then perhaps you don't invest. You try to find other ways to get things done. Because what we're finding out is this trail right now is a couple running backs that have been invested in. Like, for instance, you look at what – the L.A. Rams, but not – it is L.A. Rams. The Rams, what the Rams did recently when they lost Todd Gurley. Before that, they spent some money on wide receiver. And neither one of those gentlemen and who they made major investments in are on the team anymore.
That's true.
So, anyway.
That is true. Yeah. I'm just wondering the ripple effect that this is going to be because it sounds like the Carolina Panthers have gone all in on him. And we said it during the first 40 that, you know, he gets over like 400 touches per season and that wear and tear for 3 years. And I know you made a nice point to say that he's not going to get the 400 touches, but we'll see because Bridgewater is more of a quarterback that likes to share the sugar. And it seemed like Cam Newton over the years, he had his favorite receiver, whether it was the tight end, or whether it was another receiver, he didn't go to other receivers a lot. So he had his favorites. But Bridgewater has shown the ability to be able to spread that ball around the field, and maybe that's why the new coach came in and said, you know, this will work out, and McCaffrey is that safety net or that outlet pass where everybody else is covered except him, which I don't see that's going to happen now since he's the big money man of the Carolina Panthers. But he is one of those guys that, to me, he's proven himself. But it didn't seem like he should be the highest paid. And I think you make a great point that usually sometimes in sports, the best player is not the highest paid. And so but I do hope it has a ripple effect of all these other running backs who have to struggle and really kind of grit their teeth and fight tooth and nail to get a contract. And because let's face it, running backs have an average of 4 to 5 years tops. Running backs who are a freak of nature, like Adrian Peterson or somebody like that, don't come around that often, who can play 10, 12, 13 years. But I just look at McCaffrey. What I've seen him over the last few years out of college is built his body up to withstand all the punishment and going out there, and he's become that guy. And I'll say this again. When I saw this contract and him being the man, I thought about those two games that the Carolina Panthers lost, giving him the ball fourth and goal and didn't make it. So we can say whether it was on him or on the offensive line, don't know. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see. But don't make any mistake about it out there in podcast land. I'm not hating on McCaffrey. He's one of my favorite players coming out of college, out of Stanford. And I watch a lot of college football. I watch a lot of players. And by far, he was one of my favorite because what he could do on the field. You're talking about playing running back, playing split, running back punt and kicks. The guy earned it. He works hard. And kudos to him. I'm glad he got the big-time contract. Any other thoughts on this, Ice?
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's the point of it. I mean, that's the point of it is I think that the new coaches staff is going to be like, look, we have other weapons. They made a few minor or actually major off-season acquisitions. And the key is you want McCaffrey around because they're investing in him. And he's going to be still a heck of a player. But you dial back the touches when you have a different quarterback who wants to spread the wealth of the football. And Teddy Bridgewater, I think they brought in Robbie Anderson over from the Jets. You have Curtis Samuel, who's really coming into his own, and some other guys too. That's what makes a football team. As you mentioned too, those two fourth and ones, everybody knew who was getting that ball, and so it was no secret. So all they had to do is sit back and wait and make sure they hit the pile at the right point, and they stop him. So you can say McCaffrey all day, but then as a coach, you're like, why are we even in this position? So now they hope that they're not in that position, but they still had to pay. It's his time. And so you have him for another three, however long the contract is, with options.
It's a three-year contract.
He's ready to get his mind right. He's going to come in shape, not saying he wasn't, and he's going to run hard. On to the next one. That's how you continue with your team. Why would you want him unsatisfied if he wants a certain kind of money that he's due according to the value of the value of the contracts in the league? Why wouldn't you pay him if you think he's worth it? Because if you don't, somebody else will.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. Everything you say is valid and true. There's another story that we talked about. Carl Anthony Towns, his mother passes away. And the impact of how that will impact NBA players. And I was listening to some of the responses, some of the journalists and some of the talking heads on the sports station saying some of them were former professional players. And it's like, there's no way I'm leaving my family at this particular point with all that's going on. And I got to really be sure that I'm safe, so I don't bring things back to my family. And I know we talked about it earlier. I and Black have lost our moms in different points in our lives and how painful that must be for him. It just seemed like his mother was always around, that was a strong pillar in his life. And for her to be lost in this pandemic is tragic, as well as all the folks who are losing their lives in this pandemic. Your thoughts about Cat and loss of his mom and the impact on the NBA players?
Yeah, just from his standpoint, just to see him share his emotions in that video was heartbreaking. It really was, because you could feel the pain, but he felt like he needed to say something and he wanted to thank everybody. But at the same time, when you lose your mom or anybody that's important to you, and you've never really, I don't know what the situation is, but you haven't really experienced that type of loss before. I mean, that was like one of his main people in his life. And the thing we talked about before is the fact that I think people really need to wise up if they don't think this thing is serious one way or the other. That this is a young man that worked his tail off to to aspire and do some great things, and he became rich and wealthy, rich based on his athletic talent with his parents there the whole time, and not all the money in his bank account. Save his money. Something to think about, man. I'm thinking about it. All the money you have in the world. Unfortunately, he could not save his mother. And you're helpless. And for those that have lost their mom, you know what I'm talking about. Somebody asked you, would you give all your money in your life to spend the rest of your life with your mother? You had to start from scratch. What would you say?
You just heartbeat. Deal with it. I would do
it's your
it.
Mom, man.
Yeah.
It's your mom. It's your mom. So you can imagine what that young man is going through. And my heart goes out to him. Blessings and prayers for sure. And then in regards to the rest of the league, I think it's going to be a wait-and-see type attitude. A lot of guys are saying that now because we're seeing a lot of things that are happening around us where people are passing away. But unfortunately, in this dangerous game, this world, man, the money start changing. Let's say they stop paying players that don't play. And you don't get your money unless you come and play. And it might be a little dangerous.
Yeah.
The question is, are you not going to show up? Shoot, your family might be kicking you out of the house. You got to get my nails done. No, I'm just kidding. I was wrong. I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. Down, down, down. Back, Satan. Anyway, I'm just saying that people, they get caught up in materialistic things often. But I don't know. I hope that things work out well. The NBA is able to come to an agreement and understanding. And let's be real. If that means that, because I think the doctor that's doing all, a lot of the man, the doctor that's doing all the talking, I can't recall his name right away, but he's a former basketball player. He said perhaps the way that they come back is they have to play a while without the fans in the stands. And he said putting them up in certain places and almost quarantining them. My thing is this, the rest of the year, so what? You just want basketball and they can make sure that they're tested and keeping guys quarantined. And that's what they're going to do, do it. If that's what you want to do, you want to play? I mean, I understand about the fans, but the reality of it is you're going to miss the ticket, drive, sales, and things like that. But they're going to make that money back, clearly back on revenue, TV revenue and other stuff. They're going to make it back. More likely.
Yeah, and I think
– pay-per-view. Yeah.
Well, I think Kirk Cousins has said that he don't want to play in front of the fans. I think he's going to shoot his foot, shoot himself in the foot by saying that. He would like it better if he didn't play in front of the fans because I think he got booed a lot.
But LeBron said he didn't want to play with the fans, but he said he didn't want to play in front of them. But, I mean, I think if you want to do it and you want to be safe, then my thing is if they do have a way where they can – make sure that the players are safe, they test them or whatever they do, and you want to play in a certain location, then that's the way I think they should do it. And I know the fans would have come, but it's a different kind of time. It's just a different kind of time. And when you have a different kind of time, you have to make adjustments and you have to make changes. Doesn't mean it's going to be this way forever, but instead of feeling some kind of way because you want to be sitting courtside with your beer, breathing on somebody with something that you can make people contagious, stay home and watch the game. Okay, just don't be mad because your wife getting on your nerves because y'all been together for 6-5 weeks straight. Anyway, I'm sorry. My bad.
Tough time. It's at these times I don't mind being single. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about the Chicago Bulls. They're making some wholesale changes, or are they? So we'll come back, and Smart Ray will be with us right here on the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show. Welcome back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. I want to bring in one of my favorite people ever. Smart Ray, how you doing, man?
Not too bad. How about yourself? How's everybody doing tonight?
We're good, man. We're good. Brought you along because you're one of the biggest Chicago Bulls fan. You study them like a professor. And so when you speak on the Bulls, I know that you know what you're talking about. I also wanted to talk about the Bulls because I remember Ice Water was talking about how he's playing Xbox and playing with the Bulls. And he said, hey, they got a squad, and I'm winning with them. So let's talk about the Bulls. And so they're making a lot of changes, and I posted some of the things that they're making. I guess the new GM has come in, and I like what he's doing. He sent out a letter to the fans. He came in, and I guess after the first meeting, fired one of the high staff persons there, and also Paxton is now a quote-unquote advisor. I don't look at Paxton right. as an advisor. I look at him as a spy. And why they haven't let him go, because Paxton took over in 2003, and the Bulls haven't done anything. I mean, really done anything. And we went back and forth on the Goon Squad sports page, and I'm like, let me bring my man in so he can give his perspective on this. I'll let you give your perspective, then I'll let Ice give his perspective, and then we'll throw it around. But what's your perspective? What are the Bulls doing right now, bro?
I mean, I think the Bulls are doing what fans have been hoping they would do probably for the last 5 to 10 years, honestly. I think that the guy that they brought in just straight off replaced Paxton, right? And the interesting thing about it, his name is Arturis Karnišovas. We call him AK for short to make life easier on all of us. But what he did even before he was officially hired, he actually made 2 hires of his own. And so that's one of the things that kind of tells me that Michael Reinsdorf, the owner's son, is willing to kind of let this man get the keys to the car, so to speak, right? So he made a hire of a guy by the name of J.J. Polk, who is working with the Pelicans, who's like a cap guru and a guy that actually graduated from the University of Illinois Law School. He's a guy that's like pretty renowned for his understanding of the cap, and he's brought in as an assistant GM. He actually poached a staffer from the Nuggets, the brother of the guy who's the VP of basketball operations over there, for another staff role. Michael Finley's in talks for the potential GM spot, and so you know, he, and like you said, he fired Gar Forman like basically 12 hours into officially being hired, right? So this man is effectively, what he's trying to do is actually bring the Bulls into like the 21st century of NBA basketball, because the Bulls actually have an extremely small like front office. It's not common these days to have one assistant general manager, for instance. Like teams usually have multiple folks that are kind of experts in various areas, and so he's already started that process, and he hasn't even gone for the GM yet. He's hiring assistant GMs. He's working on our scouting, and so he's trying to bring culture in here. And when you look at what he's been able to do, like, this is a guy that played against Jordan in the Dream Team era. He's a guy that worked in the NBA front office. He's a guy that worked with the Houston Rockets, has been with the Denver Nuggets for the last 7 years. And so you're bringing in a guy that knows the international game, which has become a much bigger, you know, a much bigger picture in the NBA game, a much bigger influence.
Right.
I mean, especially when you consider more recently, I mean, you got LaMelo Ball, who's an American kid, but he's looked at as a European prospect because he played professionally over there, right? So you need these guys to come in and have a greater understanding of that. And when you look at Jokic, he was the one that found Jokic at the 41st pick in the draft, and he's arguably the best center in the NBA right now. So he's a guy that knows the game. He's a guy that even his former boss in Denver said, this is a guy that can walk into any gym in the world and people respect him. And so when you have like NBA players, NBA executives, everybody kind of touting and lauding this move, it to me, that means that, you know, that we're moving in the right direction. And Paxton, and we talked about it a little bit. I think to me, Paxton, you know, he's that Bulls lifer kind of dude that is basically he's gonna be the pet, right? He's gonna sit in the office and he's gonna give the owners and he's gonna give the Reinsdorfs, you know, somebody to, you know, to placate to. But in reality, he's not really gonna have any impact on anything. He's not gonna have any impact on anything. And my thought is, as soon as that becomes an issue, the guy that they just hired will put that to an immediate stop because he had no problems firing somebody that was here for 22 years. So I'm hopeful because, you know, especially with everything that's, you know, going on in the world, one, it's like good news for Bulls fans, right? But it's also something that kind of puts your mind in other places, you know, to kind of give some relief with things. So I think as a whole, the Bulls are moving, and that's what I'm taking away from this.
Okay, man, nice. All right, so what are your thoughts about the moves the Bulls are making, man?
It's about time. I've told you a long time ago, it's about time. It's just more or less when they were going to do it and then making sure that they were bringing in the right people. Because I think that they have been, the front office anyway, has been a deterrent to its own success. You went out, spent a lot of money on free agents, and then those individuals just kind of walked away for nothing, and it seems like there was total chaos in a lot of areas. It was like you were just getting rid of people, bringing people in. There was no real focus. And true to form, as you mentioned about the gentleman, I think you said the initials were AK. That's what we're going to use. Mm-hmm. So coming from Denver, you look at Denver's team. Denver, the way they were put together recently, they're quite young. They play real hard, and then they brought in a couple of veterans too, and they develop players. So you look at their lineup and where they're at and where they're at in the standings. Point guard Jamal Murray is phenomenal. We brought in older Paul Millsap, the Joker at center, Will Barton, Gary Harris, and then Michael Porter Jr., who's really going to be a special player. Mm-hmm. You know, gets healthy. So there's a lot, Jeremy Grant. There's a lot going on there, and they really were developing something. But they've already achieved. And now you bring somebody in with that type of mindset to the Bulls. And as I told you, I mentioned to you, I said, I play Xbox or PlayStation, and I was messing around. And I said, what the hell? The Bulls? And I started playing. I said, Kobe White, Markkanen, and Wendell Carter, and Otto Porter Jr., and then started with Zach LaVine, and they were, like, moving the ball, and they were so athletic. I was like, and they're young? I said, ooh. And the mismatches that Markkanen had at the power forward, Lord have mercy. Mm-hmm. How are they losing? And then my point at that, as I thought about it, I was like, well, if they receive proper somebody who can manage them and a solid coach, and a GM that has or front office that knows what the hell is going on. So you don't panic. You get the right people in place and realize, too, that it's going to take a little time. They have talent and put some things together. Then they could be okay. The reason why I say that is because the good teams don't rush. Remember when Indiana this past offseason was waiting on things to come back together for them. They had opportunity, and everybody kept saying that they should let Sabonis walk and the opportunity to do that. But instead, they said, no, we're trying to keep this unit together, and they re-signed him. And it was a great move because once Oladipo gets back into full structure, that team's really going to be good. So sometimes those small things like that, along with what's going to happen with the Bulls, you have to get rid of the rumblings and make sure everybody's on the same page, put the pieces together, and move forward. And that's how you do it. The Bulls have been, I think, kind of twirling around in just obscurity, if you will, for a while. And it's a reason why Jimmy Butler was smiling when he walked out the door. So I'm going to say about that.
Which gets to my next point. And one of the things that I know me and Smart Ray were going back and forth on Facebook, I always love his perspective on not only sports but a lot of things, is that why keep Paxton on? Because I felt Paxton's part of the problem as an advisor. So in 2003, you joined the organization in the front office, and you've advised on
you were part of bringing in some of the players, some of the coaches, some of the coach changes. I think they need another firing with the coach, because I said weeks ago that you're going to lose LaVine if you keep this current coach. Now, I truly believe that. And the players aren't feeling this coach at all, from my observation. And so I kind of look at, even though it said that he's not going to have any decision-making power, it's almost like he has this relationship with the ownership, and maybe if there are certain things that the owners want to know that they're not going to get from AK, then Paxton is that guy that could kind of just float around, get the temperature from the players, the coaches, things of that sort, and always report back to the ownership. Your thoughts on that, Smart Ray?
So, I mean, we touched on it briefly yesterday, but I think, you know, it's important to know what that role actually is, right? And so you look at people like Scottie Pippen, who was recently fired, which I think was a good decision because he's been kind of an ass, but that's, you know, another topic for another day. But you look at who they had, Doug Collins, right? Doug Collins was a dude that they hired for a special advisory role. And you heard nothing about Doug Collins. When did you start hearing about Doug Collins? Is when everybody else kind of started making the rumblings about Jim Boylan being an inferior coach. And that's just reality, right? Like, this guy is in over his head. There's no other way to say it. He was a great defensive assistant coach for years, and sometimes that's the ceiling for people, unfortunately. Like, not everybody is meant to move up. Not everybody has what it takes to do those, you know, to do those things. Some people are best in certain positions, and that's the way that I feel about Jim Boylan. But he actually, as the coach, and not that good of a coach, mind you, was able to kick Doug Collins out of practices, not allow him to have access to the players. So when you think about the coach being able to have that kind of authority over a special advisor, imagine what the executive vice president of basketball operations is going to be able to do. And like I said, to me, the way that this is all structured, I've watched a lot of the interviews, I've seen a lot of I've read a lot of the articles. You look at this guy that's coming in, Arturis, as the kind of guy that he wants to build culture. He's talking about coming in and working out with the guys. He's talking about like meeting with them all individually, talking about what's going on. Like, he's going to figure out what's going on. And everybody that's been involved with him has basically said that once he figures out all of the little pieces, Boylan's probably going to be gone. And if Paxton gives him a hard time, Paxton will be gone too. So he might be that advisory role, but that's one of those things that's kind of like what's the word that I'm looking for? It's basically like the everybody gets a sticker on sticker day. You know, he's got his job still. He's collecting a paycheck, but it's basically like lip service more so to the fact that he's been with the organization for a long time. The same way that Horace Grant comes back and is an ambassador, Kirk Heinrich, Tony Kukoc, they're just in different roles, you know what I mean? He's not going to have any say whatsoever when it comes to basketball decisions. And that's why, for me, like, would it be nice for them to just clean slate it and say, have a nice rest of your life and give him a severance package? That would be amazing, too. But at the same time, like, the fact that I know that he's not making any basketball decisions, I don't really care, because he doesn't have any influence over what the team is going to do. And if he did, they wouldn't have replaced him with somebody. I mean, if they cared about his opinion, they wouldn't even taken his job from him and given it to somebody else, right? So kind of where I stand when it comes to the Paxton situation, but I can also get why folks might be frustrated, because it would be nice to just say full clean slate and not worry about it.
Yeah, that's where I am. Ice, what do you think about this? Because I think this is the kiss goodbye to the Bulls coach at this particular point, based on what he came in and did with Foreman.
Yeah, well, at least you know now that AK is not afraid to make a move. And for him to make the jump from Denver, I'm sure he had major conversations with the Bulls front office to find out what is it he can do. You know, what is he allowed to do? What kind of control will he have? Because you just don't make – why would you come to the Bulls when things are thriving for you in Denver? They have to make it worth your while. And they have to put you in a position where you can have control and you can do what you need to do in order for that team to be better. So that includes perhaps with the with the coach. They'll have to. He's, I'm sure he's going to talk to him, maybe give him a little rope and see what happens, and then he's going to go from there. You guys mentioned Bob Paxton. This is kind of, I know how it's a little temperamental when people talk about Paxton, but you know, Puma, I've been knowing about Paxton a long time. Because, you know, Paxton is where I'm from Dayton, Ohio. So I watched Paxton in high school. John Paxton, when he refused to go to Dayton and got booed out, really was not allowed to come back to his hometown because he signed with Notre Dame. That's for another story. But in regards to the Bulls, he's been there a long time. Mistakes have been made, but there's loyalty there. Everybody knows that. He's one of the guys that hit the shot, man. Come on. So you can get mad all you want to. He hit with the shot. Hey, Drake knows you the rock, and you hit the shot in Chicago. I'm not from Chicago. I'm from Hawaii. But when you hit one of those shots in Chicago, come on now. Y'all know. I know y'all feel some kind of way. Back in Chicago. Come on now. Come on. I'm just saying.
Yeah, he did.
Okay. All right. Don't act like it's. We're not talking about who coach, okay? We ain't talking about who coach. We talking about facts. So all I'm saying to you is, I think that he has that bond, he has that connection with the front office, and they trusted him. They turned the team over to him. Has the team flourished while he's there? No, I'll give you that. But they moved him over to the side, and if you're going to have an advisor, you're going to have some people that are so-called ambassadors or whatever, you would prefer to have somebody that really kind of knows the game. He does know the game. He may not be able to make good moves. I give you front office, but he knows how to play the game, and he can at least say, hey, he can give his opinion. Does it mean his opinion is going to hold much water? Perhaps not. But it's another voice. And granted, as Ray had mentioned, that he's been moved to the side. So he's there, but he's only in a certain kind of role. Because, again, I don't think that AK would have come in and taken that position if he thought he was threatened or he had to second-guess himself by being around John Paxton. So you talk about Doug Collins. Doug Collins, I think they still tried to pay Doug Collins back for when they had to let him go with that Jordan scenario. See, people forget about that, too. Uh-huh. Yeah, everybody won't talk about that Doug Collins when Doug Collins got let go because he was over the top. And they brought in a guy by the name Phil Jackson. So, see, they still paying Doug Collins back. Doug was like, damn, that was my squad. Kind of like Mark Jackson at Golden State. Anyway, that's for another day. But
not really, because I wouldn't mind if they brought him in to coach the Bulls, honestly.
Right.
I'll take Mark Jackson. Bring him in.
I know. But I'm just saying, in general, far, Mark Jackson should have been with Golden State. But because of
absolutely,
that scenario.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But with all, though, is, when you look at it, I think that's where it is. So I think that loyalty's there. You see that. I think the Bulls are going to be okay. I like the move that they made because it tells you that they went after somebody that gets it. Okay? Denver was a good team, but they had to be built. And that's what you need. You need somebody that has, in my opinion, that has that experience before and with younger guys too. You look at the roster at Denver. Denver, except for Millsap's a little older, but everybody's kind of like in their 20s, the Joker, and they're stepping up, and that's what the Bulls have right now. So now the point is to mold the situation, keep the key ingredients and the key players that you need and kind of build around it, maybe another veteran here or there that wants to play with your squad and mold it. And for those that don't want to be there, then they got to bounce. And I know sometimes it's going to be, that might be a hard sale or something that people may not agree with, but you need people that are on board to be part of something great.
Okay. Ray, I'm going to ask you this last question on the Bulls, and then I want to go to another story that we talked about on our video show, the First 40. What other moves do you anticipate the Bulls making after this? Because they seem to be making a lot of moves. They're in the news cycle, and I haven't seen this much movement with the Bulls in the front office since Jerry Krause, was moved out years ago.
And that kind of goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, like, coming into this, I mean, the Bulls have actually been like a really small front office for a while now, and so what we're doing is really just stepping into the present and what front offices look like. And so it seems like a lot of wheeling and dealing, but in reality, it's just kind of filling out the front office the way that it should be. It's adding, you know, multiple scouts to the scouting department when you look at, especially when you talk about, again, you know, you find a guy like the Joker, you know, the thing that's impressive about this, you know, this hire too, is like he did all of this in a small market. They built through the draft through free agency and through But essentially, they built that team, and, you know, that's something that we need to do here because, you know, attracting free agents isn't always the best thing for us. But we're building out, you know, we've got a couple of folks that are looking at the GM spot. Michael Finley's potentially in that conversation. Mark Hughes is the GM from the assistant GM from the LA Clippers. Mark Lloyd from the Orlando Magic. The way that it sounds like what we're trying to do is actually we're going to have a couple of assistant GM spots, and then we're going to have the GM. And so right now, if I had to guess based on like front office stuff and what I'm seeing, you know, a lot of folks are, you know, hoping that, you know, we get permission to interview Shane Battier, but it's not going to happen. We got blocked on a couple of people from the Toronto Raptors and things like that. And so, which makes sense. People want to keep their people together. And so it's probably going to come down to, you know, Michael Finley, Mark Eversley, who is an assistant GM with the 76ers, and Mark Hughes from the LA Clippers. All have, you know, strength, you know, a couple of them were former players, you know, Michael Finley's a Chicago guy, you know, and so like that's always a nice story. But, you know, even Nazi Muhammad's a dark horse for a front office position who's a former Bull.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's not that for him specifically, there's rumblings about a lot of phone calls happening, but they haven't nailed down a specific spot for him. So it could be an assistant GM spot. It could be, you know, leading our scouts. It could be player development. We're not exactly sure just yet, but he's in the conversation as well. And so I think, you know, the goal is to just make sure that, one, we have a solid, you know, cohesive front office. I think the nice thing about having a guy like Arturis come in is because he's so well known and in so many circles, is that he can make a call and somebody will pick up the phone, right? You know, you have a guy like John Paxson, he's rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And that's one of the reasons why people wanted him out of office, right? So he wouldn't be able to make those calls the same way that Arturis will be able to make those calls and get somebody on the phone. And so I think within the next couple of weeks, he says that he wants to be thorough about it, and I appreciate that. You never want to jump the gun. You know, yeah, he's made 2 hires already, but he knew who he wanted, and he wanted to get those people quick, and he made it happen. But he's going to be methodical. You know, that's, you know, it's kind of his MO from everything that I've seen and read, and you know, from our news outlets and from Denver news outlets. So he's going to take his time, but probably within the next few weeks or so, he's going to deal with that, and then he's going to move on to the coaching and everything else. I do anticipate a coaching change for sure. I don't see any scenario in which Jim Boylan's the coach for the Bulls next year. I could definitely see the potential, like I mentioned, about letting him maybe give him a little rope if the season comes back this year, which I don't anticipate, but if it does, give him a chance to play it out and see what he can figure out. But I don't see him being the coach next year. And for that role, they're looking at, you know, a few different people too. You know, Kenny Atkinson from the Nets. Like I said, Mark Jackson was brought up, and he's a coach that I'd love for the Bulls to have. I think, you know, when you think about somebody that has respect, is a good, you know, person for player development, he'd be a great fit for us. But I don't know how much in NBA coaching circles he's been. He's kind of been blacklisted for a while.
Yeah.
For wrongly, but you know, people are who they are, and so they'll make decisions and screw it up for everybody else. But happens in the NBA. Right. I feel like it, like in sports as a whole, that happens. Like what happened to Kaepernick, right? Like one situation ruins everybody for you, and you don't ever get a chance again if you deserve it or not.
Right. Anything you anticipate with the Bulls, with players, coaches, any other changes you think that's going to happen?
Well, it'd be interesting. I know one of the individuals that might come up as assistant, as GM, or that position might be Calvin Booth, who's out there in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And Calvin Booth is here in Columbus. He's from Columbus, Ohio, played for Penn State. And it sounds like AK is really kind of high on him because they have experience together. So it's something but to have somebody that's been in the trenches with you in that regard as you built from the ground up, because they kind of feel you and understand you. So when nobody else may understand where he's coming from, it's good to have that guy. It's like, man, you remember what happened in Denver and we did this and that? And it's like having people around you that you feel good about in those circles. In regards to the team, I think the players are probably just kind of in a wait-and-see attitude, kind of see what's going to happen now that it's brand new. And so some of the players that may have an attitude or might have some kind of way early on, they, I think they'd be doing themselves a disservice not to listen to see what's going to happen. Give them a little chance, and I'm sure that's going to be expressed when they're having their discussions, along with the possibility when they talk about moving forward with that new coach. So, again, like I said, I know it's Xbox and PlayStation, not the same thing, but I'm trying to tell you. they have a lot of talent, and I would hate to see them do something crazy and waste it because somebody's feeling some kind of way. So everybody need to relax and chill. You don't have to win everything this year if they come back. Don't worry about it. They have made the move you've been waiting on. They made the move. They cleaned out that area that you were worried about, and they brought in a guy that sounds like he has a clue. Because believe me, Denver was decent, but Denver, they needed to really make some moves to be in place where they're at, and I think that's perfect for them. It's perfect for what the Bulls are trying to do if they're trying to win again. Otherwise, you just keep chasing after high-profile free agents, giving money, and then they're out the door in 2 years, and you're still scratching your head going, what the hell happened? So I like the approach. I like the way that they're doing. I think they got a squad. So I'm just saying, Bulls fans, chill out a little bit. And Bulls front office, don't blow this, man. You're on the right track. Don't blow this. You are not in Cleveland. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm kind of rooting for players like Denzel Valentine. He's been a favorite player of mine. And I know he's been riddled with injuries. Kobe White, I didn't see why he was sitting on the bench until he got that starting nod. But they got some talent. They got some talent, and hopefully they'll bring a winner here to Chicago. The other team, they're not my team, but the other team that is my team, the Knicks. I don't know if you heard this story, Smart Ray, but me and Ice were talking about this early in the first 40, is about Charles Oakley and his views on Patrick Ewing. Basically, he said Patrick Ewing wasn't a strong enough leader, and that cost them winning championships in New York. What are your thoughts about that statement, if you saw the story, that statement about Charles Oakley?
I did see the story. And Charles Oakley, a former Bull, too, he pisses me off because, let's be real, Michael Jordan kept Patrick Ewing and everybody else from winning the ring. Right? Like, if we're being honest, that's really what it is. Like trying to use somebody else as a scapegoat. I mean, to me, like, I don't know, and this might be an unpopular opinion, but, like, Charles Oakley doesn't even have the right to speak about Patrick Ewing being the player that Charles Oakley was. It's like Bill Laimbeer talking about, like, somebody else being the best ever other than Jordan because he feels some type of way. He's not worth even talking about it. Like, he's not – he doesn't have, like, the clout, the history, and all of those things. He was a bruiser. He was a guy that put in work. Yeah, he was a hard hat, lunch pail kind of dude. He was a good player for what he was, but he's, like, he's – that type of player that's like looking to pull down somebody based solely on the way that he feels because he's feeling some type of way. Like I would imagine that the vast majority of the other folks in that locker room wouldn't feel that way about Patrick Ewing. And so, and if it did, we would have heard about it by now, because think about it. We're in the age of social media, right? Anytime anybody feels any certain way, you know it like 3 seconds later because nobody knows how to keep their emotions aside, right? So we would have found this out already. It would have been on a Facebook post, on a Twitter post, on something. But, you know, this seems to me more like, a way to get attention. I don't know, like, anytime I think of Charles Oakley being relevant, it's always with some kind of like just negative connotation attached to it. And it's like you're taking a shot at one of the most beloved Knicks of all time. And like, for what though? Like, to what end, right? What are you really getting out of this? I don't buy it personally, because I would have expected lots of other people to speak up about it. But that's just my opinion on it.
Yeah, me and Black were having a direct message fight over we're both Knicks fans, and he bought into it, and I said, I'm not buying it. And the reason why, and I'll go to Ice real quick after this, is because the Knicks had enough chances to win, and they blew it. They didn't play smart down the stretch. They didn't get shooting when they needed shooting. They didn't get an offense to put in to get past some of those teams in the East. When they got to the championship, they didn't play smart basketball. And I looked up Charles Oakley's stats. His career stats, he averaged 9 points and 9 rebounds per game. So, yeah. You know, it's a team sport. Everybody got to get up and play and want that championship. It just can't be the star player, because we've seen it in championships where sometimes the star player is getting double, triple team. Who else is going to step up and hungry enough to get that championship? And so we mentioned earlier about Michael Jordan passing the ball to Paxton, passing the ball to Kerr. He could have took that shot, but no. Leaders have different ways of leadership. And so, Ice, what are your thoughts about this? Because when Black sent this to me, he had me at 4 o'clock in the morning going back and forth, frustrating me. I wasn't sleeping anyway, but I didn't want to think about the Knicks. And now he got me thinking about the Knicks now. What are your thoughts about this?
I'm going to say this. Charles Oakley's feeling some kind of way. Although Charles Oakley kind of had to build his own, as we said, build his career from the bottom, playing at Virginia Union, working his way through, and he was a force of one in regards to making the league and staying in the league. So kudos to that. I mean, but in regards to blaming it all on Patrick Ewing because he wasn't a strong enough leader, come on, man. And I think he probably still mad he was with the – he went with the Bulls. He got that trade went down. He had to go on, and then he still didn't get his rings because he knew if he stayed and Jordan came, he was kind of feeling like, yeah, I would have been straight. But anyway, you reflect back on some things and you're frustrated. But I find it ironic that Oakley's going after Patrick Ewing. But again, I'm going to say this one time, and I know only thing one time happens. June 22nd, 1994.
Oh, here we go.
Seven. Knicks and the Houston Rockets. It's like this. How come no one's talking about John Starks? The Knicks lose game 7. 90-84, right? Charles Oakley was 4 of 9. He had 10 points. Patrick Williams, 7 of 17. He had 17 points. John Starks was 2 of 18. He had 0-11 from the 3-point line. As I told you earlier on the 40. Game 7 of the championship series.
Mm-hmm.
My friends told me I'm crazy. They say, well, a shooter just had to keep shooting, then he'll get hot. No, the hell you don't in game 7. You 1 for 10? You 0 for 9 in the first half? Quit shooting the damn ball. Pass the ball. Pass the ball. This is the championship game. See, it's a different game because I'm going to tell you something. I mean, they nicer guys. Because if you're how you grew up or how you play ball or whatever, and I know they're professionals, but I'm telling you, do you think – I'm going to ask you this question. This is going to take you way back.
Game point.
It gets
funky in game point.
Do you think guys like – and if you don't understand this, please go look it up for history lessons. There's a guy by the name of Maurice Lucas. That was one of the most nastiest enforcers in basketball ever.
Portland Trailblazers, yep.
Right, and they're going for the championship. They're trying to win, and the guy's missing. You think they're not gonna check on him in the locker room at halftime, and he keep jacking up shots with the game on the line? I promise you, I don't understand that. I mean, I love.
Who was the coach? Who was the coach at that time?
Was it Van Gundy, or was it?
Was it Van Gundy back then?
Was it Van Gundy, or might have been Riley?
No, it was Pat Riley.
It was Riley, okay. It was Riley, but
wow,
that's
surprising. Okay,
that's
a benchable offense in most Pat Riley systems.
I'm trying to say that. So my point is, I don't know. I love my brother Puma to death. But we was hooping back in the day, and we went in and we had a chance to win. And Puma 0 for 11, or getting close to 10. I'm pulling to Puma to say, yo, man, you need to pass that rock. Now, we're not going to fight because that's my brother. But he damn sure going to know you need to give it up. It ain't your night tonight. And that's basketball.
That's
how do you stand by and go, oh, man, he's going to get hot? When? Game 7? When? 0-for-11 from 3-point line. 2-of-18. And he played 42 minutes. What the hell? And he had 5 fouls. Get him out the game. Score 8 points.
And I imagine his 3-point percentage wasn't even good enough to be throwing up 11 of them. I mean,
that's not. What I'm saying.
Especially back then. Back then, basketball wasn't played like that. So that's really.
Yeah.
That's really surprising that he took that many threes, because that's not even
here's
warrior ball.
here's what's even bizarre about that, and I know this is breaking it down too much, but there were out of that on that whole game, only 4 players took 3-pointers. Derek Harper took 5 threes. He is 2-for-5. Greg Anthony took three 3-pointers. Hubert Davis took 1. John Stark took 11.
Nobody Hubert Davis should have been the one shooting him.
Yeah.
Right, Hubert Davis was the gunner on that team. Hubert Davis was
11,
the gunner on that team. He shouldn't have shot that. That's crazy.
He shot 11% from the field, man. Come on, Pat Riley. That's why he left. Anyway, went down the plane with the whole point of it. I'm still waiting on an answer as to why the hell they let that happen.
I don't know. I know.
Well,
now,
it's
if he
it's
wanted
the same
to play
team that
Charles
refused
Smith,
to trade Mitchell Robinson for Anthony Davis,
yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. And then yeah. You know, I blame Charles. You could blame Charles Smith. I would have went along with that. You could have blamed O.J.
Oh, Charles Smith
for driving the truck in the final, and they had to delay the game.
Yeah,
I would have went with that.
Yeah.
But not Patrick
That's
Ewing. He
not
changed
Ewing,
the
not.
Franchise once he was drafted. He changed the franchise. The Knicks wouldn't be anywhere without Patrick Ewing. When he came in and, you know, the commissioner at that particular time, Stern, whether he freezed the card, the lottery card, or bent it at the end, got Patrick Ewing to New York, that was it. It was game over, and they were supposed to get at least one championship, and they didn't get the job done. Now, that's coming from a Knicks fan. I have to be honest. Mm-hmm. They did not get the job done. And there were years. I was here in Chicago when it was happening. And years where I would watch Chicago and the Knicks go at it. Chicago would be down in the third quarter, going in the fourth quarter, 5 minutes to go, and the Knicks would find a way to lose every time. And it was frustrating to watch that. It wasn't just Patrick Ewing. It wasn't just Patrick Ewing. So I hope we get Black on pretty soon. We can discuss this and debate that.
Hey,
but, he had me at 4 o'clock in the morning, frustrated. Yeah.
Can I throw one other thing in there? So he said that about the Knicks. But here's my thing, because I live in Ohio. So Cleveland, right? Cleveland had a nice spot for a while. They had Ron Harper, and they had guards. They were loaded, and they were losing to the Bulls. Then all of a sudden they got some kind of way. They had to make these crazy changes. And at one point they could have had Kevin Johnson and Ron Harper as their guards before they made that trade to Kevin Johnson. But they ended up trading Ron Harper. Harper ends up leaving, gets 5 rings with Phil and the Bulls and with the Lakers. So my point of it is, it wasn't just the Knicks. Everybody was losing to Jordan. So why did you lose your mind looking like, oh, my God, we got to do something crazy? No, you just need to chill out.
There's 10 Hall of Famers lost an opportunity because of Jordan.
Exactly. So why here in Ohio, Cleveland's like, the hell, why are y'all doing this? So my point back to the Knicks thing is, they should have worked harder. They should have and did what they had to do. And because the Pistons was like, you got us, but it took a minute. So, I don't know. I just blame one guy. And nobody, how come nobody blame Pat Riley? For letting John Stark shoot from 3-point line. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm just saying. So don't look, hey, Jordan got everybody.
All right, we're going to end that segment right there. Smart Ray, man, we got to keep doing this again. I know it's been a while since you've been on the show, but when I want to talk about the Bulls, I go to you. I go to you because I know what you're talking about.
You can bring me on any basketball segment. I'm always down to talk about basketball.
Okay. We will do that. Stay safe, my brother.
Likewise. Y'all two, take it easy, all right?
Take it easy, brother.
All right, man. Nah. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back on the Goon Squad.
Welcome back to the Goose Watch Sports Radio Podcast. ESPN showing the rebroadcast of the seventh game of the 2010 Boston Celtics and the Lakers. I can't remember who won this, because I know they went 2 years in a row. Did they go 2009-2010? Boston won the first one, the LA won the second one, or who won this series?
I think Boston won the first one. Boston won the first one.
Because I was wondering if Boston won at the Lakers, or did they win in Boston? Because it's the fourth quarter now with 11 minutes left to go, and they're winning, but only by two. So I can't remember. I know Ron Artest won a ring with the Lakers, and he's on the court now. So maybe this is the one where the Lakers won. Anywho,
I think so, because I think Boston won at home.
Okay. Yeah, I was trying to remember that. And, yeah, they have Rasheed Wallace on Boston. So I was like, man, okay. I'm going to be watching this Sunday, The Last Dance. I'm glad ESPN, maybe they listened to our show and took our advice about not waiting until June to put this on and put it on now. And it's getting a lot of buzz. And one of the things that the buzz that it's getting, and all these different players are coming out, like a Jerry Stackhouse and other people that were around the Bulls at that time, and really saying that Michael was really hard to be around. And you have some of those iconic players that you could say that about, that were irritable, that they were hard to be around. But I'm looking forward to watching this. Even though I'm a Knicks fan, I'm looking forward to watching this to see some of the backstories that we didn't get to see during the Bulls championship run. Are you looking forward to this series? And if so, why or why not?
I'll probably say yeah. Just to see some insight. You hear a lot about Jordan. You hear about how he really was. He might have been a little bit a diva, over the top. And that might have been hard for people to deal with, like Stackhouse, as he got older. So he couldn't do what he wanted to do. But on the same level, should I say. So I can see that. But I would like to see their particular response now and considering what happened, what took place. But what I find ironic is, though, a lot of people thought that Michael Jordan was going to be the same Jordan that he was in Chicago and Washington, and I find that to be such a farce. I was like, how can you think that? I know he's considered the greatest of all time by many, but he's older. He's not the same guy. I find that out, but it's probably just some ins and outs, because Jordan can be something else, or what it could be from time to time. So I want to see how if anybody is willing to step out of their comfort zone. Because, you know, still, he probably could be carrying a grudge now. Jordan is going to be looking around at people and stuff like that, too. But it would be interesting to hear a different person, different perspective as to how it happens. And plus, too, not much is going on. So it'll be something to kind of watch that we haven't seen before.
And one of the things I'm wondering, Ice, is that does he – I know he won a lot and he's very successful – but, you know, folks are kind of labeled him as the asshole. And are the repercussions of him doing that then really affecting him now with some of the folks that he played with, his peers, things of that sort, where people like Jerry Stackhouse came, hey, I regret playing with him. Even Rip from the Detroit Pistons. Was saying, hey, you know, this guy, I wanted to play on the Jordan team for Nike, and he's like, hey, you're not good enough. And how he used to rip different players and things of that sort. The only player that I saw that he couldn't punk was the Chief, formerly of Boston, Robert Parrish, who I guess Robert Parrish is a story, famous story that Robert Parrish, Jordan came up to Robert Parrish talking about he was going to bust his ass, and Robert Parrish didn't back down. He was like, bring it. Let's go. So will it be repercussions from this particular story coming out, people kind of seeing the real Jordan? I remember being in high school, and his high school
We couldn't play each other in basketball, and I probably told this story before, but in baseball, we could play each other. And I remember the girls, he was playing center field one game when we were playing, and he was this basketball phenom, but when he was playing baseball, the girls would stand by the fence when he was playing in the outfield and tease him because of his skin complexion, and they would say he was so ugly. So did he – I always wondered, did he kind of internalize that and got famous and said, you know what, screw all of y'all that hated on me before, and I'm going to be this type of person where you can't tell me anything about my looks, my celebrity, all this other stuff.
To answer that, the latter, I can see that because I remember going to Chicago for a Bulls game back in the day when they played Orlando with Shaquille O'Neal and some other games, and when the man came out of the locker room, and I'm definitely not gay. That man, like a model, he looked like $1 million. His skin was smooth. He looked like he was Jordan, the way he was dressed from head to toe, and you could tell he was just everything was put together from a beauty standpoint. So, yeah, people take that to heart when people say certain things, and when he got to that level, I'm sure he was like, look. You wish you were me now. And once he turned over, once he's able to show how great he could be, then he probably did rub some people the wrong way. But in regards to if Jordan cares what they think, come on, man. He told you that in the Hall of Fame one speech. He don't care. I'm going to be me because you wish you were me. And that might have turned some people off. That might have had them feeling some kind of way. But Michael Jordan is who he is, competitor. He can be mean, he can be tough, and you either love him or you hate him. He tried to get along with you. I mean, hell, we still waiting on him. Certain things never change. Him and Isaiah Thomas, they ain't going to never change.
Yeah.
They're going to go to their graves with that. But in regards to, you mentioned Robert Parrish. Remember, Robert Parrish is not afraid of nobody. Robert Parrish put his hands on a couple
right.
people. Jordan didn't want that smoke. Our parents from the old school. Plus, you got this package coming in too. You messing with man, please. Look, certain people you don't mess with. Kind of like when Kobe Bryant, may he rest in peace, realized he really didn't want that smoke with Metta World Peace. End up having you in the squad. Would you just leave alone? But I don't know. I mean, some people probably were feeling some kind of way with Jordan, and if he didn't want you on his team. That's what it was. He'd tell you straight up. He didn't think you was good enough. So, for Rip Hamilton to feel some kind of way, go work on your game. That's what you should do. Because, you know, Jordan's about that. You play one-on-one. If you get the spot, then you get the spot, right? That's who he is. He's a competitor.
Right.
The way he allegedly gambles, the whole nine. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they play out. But, you know, Jordan don't give a rip, man. He don't give a rip about that. He says, look, it's Jordan. Has he ever shown us that he's like, man, I'm so sorry. Are you upset with what I said? Are you upset? That's not Jordan. Jordan, don't do that, man. Mm-mm.
Okay. I know there's not much Major League Baseball to talk about, but there is a governor of Arizona that he believes that the Major League Baseball, if they wanted to continue their season in Arizona, that they can handle it. What is your thoughts about this?
This is all about timing. That's all it is. I mean, they might be able to handle it, and they might be able to do it from a quarantine standpoint where all the teams are together and they try to work it out. They probably have enough ballparks, and it makes a lot of sense. But, again, this is a different time, different age that we're living in, and only time is going to tell how things change. So it's great. Like the NBA now is trying to put together a plan, some type of 25-day plan where they could play their season and playoffs and things like that and have it organized. It's great to have a plan, but there's nothing going to be concrete until we start seeing some different results and things start opening up where people make sure that it's safe. So I understand it makes sense for them because it's warm. It's always going to be warm for the most part, and they can get started early. So I applaud Arizona for being ready. Other teams, other places might try to be ready too. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to how this continues to develop and in what fashion.
Yeah, I I don't know, man. I was talking to one of our classmates, Fast Eddie out of Detroit, and we were talking earlier, and I was just kind of looking at some sports stuff, you know, getting prepared for the show, and I'm like, you know what? I don't think this is going to happen this year. I think this year is a wash. And he was like, yeah, I think I believe that too. We both came to the conclusion that it may be a wash for sports because we don't have a handle on this. And God forbid that we do open this up and then do let people come out and then this thing spikes and gets even worse. Looking at some of the reports, they're saying people who had it, they thought they were immune. That's not the case. They haven't counted the folks that didn't get tested, and they're actually bringing those folks in and finding out that they died of this virus too. So the numbers aren't really accurate right now. And until they come up with a cure or a vaccine or get a handle on how to handle this, then I don't think it's safe for anybody to kind of speculate when we're going to come back and do certain things in certain industries. I know certain industries have to go on for the survival of the human race, but sports, to me, and I said this in plenty of shows, is not a priority at this particular point. And I understand that they're losing a lot of money, but until you can really kind of safeguard that folks will be safe and you can do this, I think it's a wash for this year until we can get a handle of what's really going on, because we really don't know what's going on with this. The segue a little bit, the UFC postponed their fight they were supposed to have on an island that we still don't know where the island is. But the WWE is still rolling. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, as you said, it just depends on what's going on. I understand, as you mentioned, about the situation with the league and the sports in general, and people wanted to want people to play, or the guys want to play. But again, I think, like you said earlier, in the 40, that the first 40, that money's gonna play an issue, man. Safety is key, but some people still, that money is it just rides them to no end. And I think what you're going to see with that in mind, if they do have a season, as I mentioned before, I don't think you're going to see the fans. Fans won't be included. Mm. They won't. They think they can, the powers that be probably think they can still get the money and still have their seasons without the fans. Fans are not going to be around. I don't see the fans in capacity for a long time in sports. I don't. And I think that's the wash that you see in a year. And that might even be for college football if they play. Where you don't see fans. That's crazy. I know that sounds crazy with that big old stadium, 105,000 people. But I think that's crazy. And I think the other part, too, is WWE, it's a different game, man. It's not really – that's where it shows you that it's more entertainment than it is sports.
Right, sports, yeah.
Because they are able to stage certain things and maybe do some things and maybe even tape things now that which is kind of like an illusion, kind of like a magic trick. You can do this and nobody sees it and nobody's around. Who knows if a tree falls in the forest? From mm-hmm. standpoint, they can set up things and they can edit it and have somebody falling down to do one thing and then put it together. And you go, oh, man, they were fighting. They were doing this and that. So I think that's where that the real athletic and sports plays a part compared to entertainment. I think that's where they're able to do what they do. And it's not they should not be doing it either, but they get away with it because of the way that they're probably presenting it from that standpoint.
Okay. Still staying with fighting, I'm seeing a lot of videos where Floyd Mayweather is training his nephew, training his son on boxing. And I came across an article where he says he wants to follow in the footsteps of his dad and his uncle and being a great trainer. Do you see Floyd Mayweather being as good a trainer as his uncle was to him?
I'm not sure. I think he could be a decent trainer because he's been around his uncle and his dad. I mean, and even his Uncle Jeff, for that matter, has done some training. So. Mm-hmm. the family has been great trainers. I think that's one of the pieces that they don't get a lot of credit for. You talk about Floyd as a boxer. You talk a little bit about his dad. You talk about the brothers, Mayweather, the three brothers. But as trainers, they have been very solid. You look at Roger, his uncle, was with Floyd for 12 years. You know, dad was with him first. So I think the recipe or the ingredients are there for Floyd to do decent, to do well. But it's going to take time. One, because everybody is not like the Mayweathers, okay? The one advantage Floyd had, he had three people that were professional boxers prior to his becoming professional. And the other thing, too, is they were almost interchangeable because everybody knew the style that the Mayweathers used, right? His dad is the one kind of implemented. His Uncle Roger was able to kind of pick it up. They kind of tweaked it a little bit. Dad was more of a defense type of guy. He made sure that you got out the way. You could he did the shoulder roll. He's the guy that made sure that you were more defense oriented. Uncle Roger took it to another level where he's able to kind of say, okay, you're using the shoulder roll in defense, but now we're going pop, pop, pop. See that opening right here? He left himself up, 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 and Jeff was kind of just along the way with them as well. So all the ingredients are there. But the question is, how much time does Floyd want to put into this? And he has also must realize that everybody's not him.
Right.
That's the other
That's the point talent. I was going to make.
He's a special talent. And then, of course, his uncle, his dad are both magnificent folks who understood how to work inside the style. So he might be a solid trainer, but then again, if you're working with inferior talent, how far can you take them? And then is that going to be good enough for you?
That was going to be my point, man, because we've seen like great athletes who come back to try to train or coach and it didn't go well. And the first thing I thought about when I saw this story was Magic Johnson coming back to coach. Larry Bird was a little successful, more successful than Magic Johnson. Never won a championship, but he did hang in there a little bit. When you're a great athlete, you kind of think that everybody thinks and sees the way you see things, and it doesn't happen. And will that frustrate him to a point where you're like, you know what, I'm done with this. I don't want to deal with you. Or will it break the spirit of some of the fighters who don't rise up to that level that he thinks that they need to be based on his great stint in boxing. And so that's why I'm always leery when great players become coaches or the heads. It doesn't happen that often. I was watching The Undisputed, and they did this series on black quarterbacks a while back. And one of the things that was brought out in that show was that the influx of black quarterbacks being second string or coming off the bench and how important that was. And I was trying to figure out, well, why would he say that there needs to be more backup black quarterbacks? And the point that they was making is those particular the backup quarterbacks are usually the offensive coordinators, the quarterback coaches, and that leads them in a track to head coach. And I'm like, oh, it makes a lot of sense now. So it's usually not the star players that are getting these positions. It's the ones that got the clipboard, get an understanding of the game, both how to play on the field physically and the mind of different players and the coaches, and you're around the coaches a lot. And so that is a way to get inroads into coaching. And so that's why when I saw this, I'm like, you know, I don't know if this is a good spot for Mayweather, but I like to see how he does it. Maybe he can prove us wrong and be a better trainer, or just as good a trainer as he was a fighter. That would be great. But I think it's honorable for him to take on that role and say, you know what, I want to be a trainer. I don't know if he's saying this because of the recent loss of his uncle, but maybe he's saying this because it's like, this is my obligation to give back what was given to me. And if that's the way he's taking it, I think that's very honorable. Sometimes we don't say great things about Floyd Mayweather and some of his exploits, but I think if that's what where he's taking it, I think that was honorable. Any other things you want to say about this before we move on to the next story?
Yeah, in that regard, I don't know what his reasoning behind it is, wanting to be a trainer, but his uncle was very special in his life. very special. When his dad had to relinquish the chance to train Floyd, you think 12 years. And Floyd was Pretty Boy Floyd back in the day when he had his hands and he was really quick and he was evolving. But his true development of who he became as Money Mayweather and the guy who really could not be hit and became one of the most polarizing champions in the ring, a lot of that credit has to go to his Uncle Roger. And even when his Uncle Roger got sick, this shows you how great they are as a family in regards to the training aspect. When his uncle got sick and he had to relinquish his duties because of his complication of diabetes, his dad just came over and just kind of said, okay, now we're going to go resort back to being more defensive because you're getting a little older and we want to be able to get you out of the way. And they just kind of smoothed it over like they didn't miss a beat. But for Uncle Roger Mayweather to work with him 12 years, I can see him feeling some kind of right now, kind of saying, you know what, damn it, my uncle basically took care of my career when my dad, you know, had some issues. And as you said, that would be a hell of a testament. That'd be bigger than any money amount of money he could donate in honor of his uncle. Just say that, hey, I'm willing to do the blood, put the grinding in and get the blood, sweat, and tears in to help develop champions or better fighters, because that's what his uncle did for him. And they were tight, buddy. And the thing about Roger Mayweather, even though he had some issues often, you know, outside the ring as well, Roger Mayweather was just as comfortable in the ring or in the gym with Floyd as he was in the casino with regular folks from around the way. That's who he was, man. That was Roger Mayweather. Yes, sir.
Sticking to boxing, bro. Bernard Hopkins and Shane Mosley are going to enter the Boxing Hall of Fame in the year 21. They were supposed to go in this year, but due to recent events, that can't happen. What can you say about these two fighters, man?
Well, both of them were kind of unique in their own way. You look at Sugar Shane Mosley, who was coached by his dad for a long time. He had quick hands. He was followed up, moved away, and was not afraid to fight anyone. That's one thing I like Sugar Shane Mosley. He would fight anybody. You think about the times that he got battled with Oscar De La Hoya, ended up finally getting in the ring with Floyd. He didn't run from anybody. And I like the style. Of course, he had some issues. He and his dad went back and forth, father and son type thing, but he's definitely deserving and is to be considered and also receive that award because he's one of the best out there and during his career. So I always liked his attitude. And could he have been better? Was he one of the greatest of all time? He's damn good. Bernard Hopkins is just so dominant from the standpoint of what he had to go through, go to prison, come back, turn his life around, and then end up walking through the middleweight division as one of the most polarizing individuals that you ever want to meet. Just the discipline alone, he was so solid. And for years, he was able to just kind of walk through many people. And the fact that he really changed his life around after setbacks that he suffered, and then he continues to be a kinder, easygoing guy now. A little bit more settled down, didn't have to be all crazy and whatnot. And he's in a good place. And also is being, I think, one of the probably investors or connected with Golden Boy Promotions. I think his life's in a good place. You can see that. So kudos to him. In the ring, he was really solid as well. The executioner probably stayed a little longer, but so many of them do. But he deserves to be in there as well. Kudos to him.
Kudos to both of them, man, and well-deserving. This is a story that I didn't want to start with, but I wanted to end with the Carl Lyson story. And it's been the NASCAR saying the N-word and got called out for it. But I didn't know too much about this baseball player, but Marcus Stroman has become one of my favorite players, and I haven't seen him pitch. And the reason why I say that and with this story is that he called out Kyle Larson. It's like, this guy needs his ass beat for that. And I've never seen another player just come out and say what we all felt about this situation and come out and say, this dude needs to get a beat down for this because he knew better. And he'd been using this word for a long time. It was, and I saw the tape,
and it was really unnecessary. What are your thoughts about this story and Marcus Stroman's comments about this?
Well, I mean, I understand where Stroman is coming from, and he has a right to his opinion out there, so I get that, and I see that. But in regards to the individual that says this, what's bizarre to me, though, is, and it shows you how NASCAR is really kind of walking on pins and needles with this scenario, and they felt like they had to do something real quick because they did not want to be caught up in the whole factor that it was them and they tolerate this type of behavior. So that's why you saw a lot of sponsors dropping off, because we know the long history of NASCAR and what people think about, a lot of people thought about NASCAR. So they quickly removed themselves from the situation. And then the young man says mm-hmm. what he says, but the part of it too is though that his mom is Japanese. So you think mm-hmm. about the whole. I mean, I get it. I don't get why. I think he's trying to prove a point or trying to be cool or whatever the hell it was. I've not heard it, but the whole premise of it is, when you have that connection, and why would you say something? We live in a different kind of world. People are using words in some kind of different connotations. But I know why NASCAR jumped off to that real quick. And we have a lot of silly people in this world, man. We have a lot of silly people. But what he's finding out now is NASCAR wants not a damn thing to do with that, bro. They do not. They like, hell no. Nah. We just getting over the – and they're struggling to find fans as it is. He keep people's interest
right.
in that sport. So the last thing they need is some drama like this. So it's like – you know, you got to figure this out, or we'll cut all the ties from you. Definitely our damn sponsors, because nobody wants to be connected with that from the standpoint of this is what you allow. So I think Lowry is really finding out, get a rude awakening as to what's happening. So you might call it a joke of trying to be cool, but it's costing you a lot of dollars, and it might cost you actually a chance to be a part of the sport that you make as your profession. So yeah, it's a lot going on there. So notice NASCAR immediately jumps you. Hell no. Nah. Nope.
Yeah, they immediately, the sponsors,
yeah.
A lot of those same sponsors sponsor the NBA, NFL, all this other stuff. So when they talk about sensitivity training, damn that. You've grown, you're old enough, you should have known better, but hit them in the pockets. Hit their sponsorship. And if NASCAR says, you know what, you can no longer be part of us, I wouldn't be mad at that too. But the sensitivity training, that line that everybody gets when they cross the line like this, damn that. The sensitivity training should have happened at home. It should have happened way before he became a professional. So hit them in the pockets. Anytime somebody violates, hit them in the pockets is what I'm saying. Hey, man, it's always a pleasure. Well, thanks, Mark Ray, for joining us early on the show. If you missed any part of this show, you can always rewind it back. We're on Blog Talk 24 hours, 7 days a week. So, and also, hit us up on YouTube, the Goon Squad Sports Radio show on YouTube with the First 40. We will catch you next week. Take care. Feel like Rodney King, man. Can we just all get along?
And Oh, it's gonna be somebody. Oh, it's gonna be one.
Wow.
That's when you think everything is good. It's gonna be one. That is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
one.
Bro.
All right, brother.